All right, let's jump right in with a deep dive into a case that really makes you think. Albala v. City of New York, a case that tackles this wild question. Can someone be held responsible for harm caused to a person who didn't even exist when the wrong happened?
It really throws you for a loop, right?
Yeah.
This case takes us into preconception torts actions before conception that allegedly lead to a child's harm later. It pushes the boundaries of traditional tort law.
So, what happened in this case?
It all starts back in 1971 with Ruth Albala having an abortion at Bellevue Hospital where, during the procedure, her uterus was perforated.
Okay, so that's the first event. What happened next?
Well, the timeline matters here. So in 1973, Ruth sued for medical malpractice, for the damage from the perforated uterus. Now, fast forward to 1975, Ruth conceives a child, Jeffrey. He's born the following year with brain damage.
So that's 4 years after the initial procedure.
Right, and here's where it gets interesting. In 1978, a lawsuit is filed on Jeffrey's behalf, claiming his brain damage is a direct result of the botched abortion that happened before he was even conceived.
Wow, that's a consequence is echoing across years, impacting someone who wasn't even there. Crazy. So what was the main question for the court?
The court had to figure out if a child, in this case Jeffrey, has a legal right to sue for harm caused by something that happened to his mother before he was even conceived. Basically, does a doctor's duty of care extend to a person who didn't yet exist?
That's a huge question. What did they decide?
The New York Court of Appeals ultimately said Jeffrey didn't have a cause of action. They said that even though the harm to Jeffrey might have been foreseeable, the doctor didn't have a duty of care to a person who wasn't there yet.
Wait a second. Isn't foreseeability a big part of negligence?
Yeah.
Why is conception the line in the sand? It seems kind of random.
It does make you wonder. You have to understand, the court was really worried about opening a floodgate of lawsuits. Generations of people suing over medical errors affecting their ancestors. Imagine that.
I can see how that would be chaos. It's like they tried to draw a line to prevent it. Was that the end of it? Everyone agreed?
Not quite. There was a dissenting opinion arguing the majority was letting fear of future lawsuits trump basic legal principles.
Oh, a dissenter. Tell me more.
The dissenting judge emphasized that all the elements of negligence were there: duty of care, breach, causation, and actual harm in Jeffrey's case. The dissent felt the majority let their worries about manageable bounds of liability overrule established law.
So basically, if the harm is real and you can prove it, the court shouldn't just deny a remedy because it's a new situation.
Exactly. The dissent also argued that if lawmakers were worried about these societal implications, then they should address it, not the courts.
So, a disagreement on who tackles these big questions.
Where?
Do you think the majority prioritized stability over individual justice, like the dissent said?
Tough call. It shows how tricky legal decisions can be. And there's more. This case went way beyond Jeffrey Albala.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, Albala set a precedent in New York, and courts there reject these preconception torts cases. But here's the thing. Other states have totally different rules. Some allow claims in limited cases where negligence directly affects fetal development, a real patchwork across the country.
So one case became this whole Pandora's box of legal and ethical stuff.
It makes you think, right? What started with one child and a botched abortion ended up challenging our basic ideas about law and how far our obligations go.
This deep dive is mind-blowing, but we've only scratched the surface. We'll be back soon to keep exploring Albala v. City of New York.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Albala v. City of New York. Before the break, we were talking about that dissenting opinion. Remember, the dissent really disagreed with how the majority decided the case, saying they made a special exception in tort law because the injury happened before conception.
Right. And Judge Fuchsberg, the dissenting judge, argued that all the classic elements of negligence were right there in front of them. Duty of care to Ruth Albala, the doctor messed up by perforating her uterus, and that directly caused Jeffrey's brain damage, leading to real harm.
Yeah, the dissent felt that denying Jeffrey a legal claim just because the injury came from something before he was conceived was creating a loophole where there shouldn't be one.
So the dissent's position is, if you can prove the harm is there, the court shouldn't avoid providing a solution just because the situation is new or raises tough policy questions.
That's a great way to put it. Judge Fuchsberg was concerned about the majority's focus on manageable bounds of liability, seeing that as a slippery slope. He felt courts shouldn't just limit liability based on what-if scenarios.
I get his point. It's like the majority is letting hypothetical worries about lawsuits outweigh the actual harm done to Jeffrey.
And the dissent didn't stop there. Judge Fuchsberg also addressed the defensive medicine argument, saying it was flawed and paternalistic.
What did he mean by that?
Well, he argued that encouraging doctors to be more careful and think about risks isn't a bad thing. It's not defensive medicine to just be more thorough. The focus should always be on what's best for the patient.
Makes sense. Recognizing preconception torts wouldn't turn all doctors into lawsuit-fearing robots. It would just encourage more care and awareness about the long-term effects of their actions.
Exactly. The dissent argued the majority was creating a false choice: protect doctors or ensure justice for harmed patients. But you mentioned other states have different approaches to this. What does it look like overall?
It's a mixed bag, really. Albala set a precedent in New York, but other states went their own way. Some are strict, like New York, while others allow these claims, but only in limited cases where preconception negligence directly affected fetal development. So in those more lenient states, what kind of situations would allow a claim?
Usually, the negligence before conception has to directly and provably impact fetal development. For example, if a doctor carelessly prescribes a medication knowing it could cause birth defects if the woman gets pregnant, and then she has a child with those defects, that might be grounds for a claim in some states.
So there's a difference between negligence affecting the fetus directly and negligence that creates a general risk but isn't directly linked to the child's injuries.
Exactly. It's a nuanced area of law, and the rules vary by state.
Sounds like a headache for lawyers trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
Shows how one case, Albala, opened up so many legal questions.
Absolutely. And the implications go beyond medical malpractice, too. What about environmental pollution? Could a child harmed by their parents' exposure to toxins before conception have a claim?
Makes you think, right? The line between what is and isn't a preconception tort can get blurry fast.
And that's why this case is still relevant and debated today. It makes us think about causation, foreseeability, and the limits of legal liability. It also shows how important dissenting opinions are. They challenge potentially problematic precedents and make us re-examine our assumptions.
This whole discussion has been fascinating. It shows how one case can expose the complexities and sometimes contradictions in our legal system. But we're not done yet. We'll be back soon to wrap up our deep dive into Albala v. City of New York. And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Albala v. City of New York. We've gone from botched abortions to the very basics of tort law, and even talk about what we might owe people who aren't even born yet.
That's what keeps this case so interesting. Even all these years later, it really shows this tension in tort law, balancing the need to compensate people who've been harmed with keeping the legal system from being swamped by lawsuits.
Like, the court is walking a tightrope. On one side, you have the real, terrible harm that Jeffrey Albala suffered. His life was changed forever by a medical error. But on the other side, there's this fear of endless lawsuits, each one crazier than the last, potentially freezing whole industries because they're afraid of being held responsible for something that happened before a person even existed.
It's the classic floodgates argument, and it holds a lot of weight in legal decisions. Courts don't want to just open the door to a whole new category of claims without thinking about what might happen.
But, like the dissent said, shouldn't basic legal principles matter more? If all the parts of negligence are there, why should it matter that the injury started with something that happened before conception?
That's the big question, and there's no easy answer. The majority in Albala basically decided that allowing all these new preconception tort claims would be too messy, too unpredictable, and just too much.
So they chose stability over what some might see as a fair result for Jeffrey. It still makes you wonder, where do we draw the line with legal responsibility?
That question still bothers legal experts and policymakers. Albala might have settled it in New York, but we talk about how other states did things differently. It's a real mix of laws across the country.
This whole thing really shows how the law struggles when it hits these big scientific and ethical questions. When does life begin? What do we owe future generations? These aren't easy questions to answer in court.
That's why cases like Albala are so important. They make us face these tough questions and deal with these sometimes conflicting values that our legal system is built on.
So for our listeners out there working in law, what are the big takeaways from our deep dive into Albala v. City of New York?
I think there are a few key points. First, even when harm seems obvious, courts can be hesitant to expand liability, especially with new or unusual situations. Policy worries, like the fear of tons of lawsuits, often really affect these legal decisions.
It reminds us that the law isn't always about finding the perfect answer, but finding one that works, balancing different interests and concerns.
Second, Albala shows how important it is to know the specific laws in your area. Like we saw, preconception torts are a tricky area, and the rules can be wildly different depending on where you are.
So do your research, everyone.
Yeah.
And lastly, I think this case shows that the law is always changing as we learn more about science, technology, and as society's values shift.
That's what makes studying and practicing law so interesting. It's not just about memorizing rules. It's about being part of a conversation about the values and ideas that define our society.
Albalavie City of New York might not have given us all the answers, but it definitely started an important conversation about where liability ends, what we owe each other, and even what life itself means. It's a case that still matters today as we deal with new ethical and legal challenges from genetics and what we know about development before birth.
It's a great example of how one case can bring up huge questions that go beyond the legal world and make us think about responsibility and the core of our society.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Albalavie City of New York. Until next time, stay sharp, and we'll be back with another fascinating case that will make you think.